It's Siren Radio, and it's time for another edition of Cultural Connections. And in this episode of Cultural Connections, we have got a former sports commentator and a genius of BBC local radio, who's now the deputy head of school for the Lincoln School of Film and Media. We've also got two fabulous students, one who's reading a postgraduate MSc in, or MA in, sports journalism, and the other who's doing another wondrous postgraduate course. Okay, let's try and identify who's who from that particular aspect, and let's start off with our soul who we actually thought he was going to be down with appendicitis, but he's made a miraculous recovery. He's with us now, back in the programme. He's doing the MA in sports journalism. That's Aditya. How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad to be here. This is my first time on live radio, so.
We're glad to have you. Now, share with us, where are you from? What brought you to Lincoln?
So I'm from India originally, in Delhi, which is the capital. And I've always had an interest in sport. I used to play sport quite well, as I used to think, but not well enough to make the cut. So, and I used to write as well. So I thought might as well just merge both of them and do
absolutely
a degree in it.
Perfect. We'll find out about a variety of other things as that heads through the whole system. Now, our other postgraduate student, making her debut on the whole production, so coming into a whole new world, that's Fatimatu Ahmed from Ghana, I believe.
Yes, please.
Okay, so from Ghana to Lincoln. Again, share with us your journey and what you're reading at the University of Lincoln.
Okay, so back in Ghana, I did a BA in journalism, majoring communication but majoring in journalism. Mm-hmm. And then I've done a bit of work with media houses in Ghana, and then I thought that I would go into education, so I decided to offer an MA in media and communication in Lincoln, so I could,
which is fantastic. And it's good to make your acquaintance, because as you said, you're my tutor. I said, yes, you haven't been to see me, you have now. So it's there, we work the way into it in some way, shape or form, and we'll book various other things as well. Now, by process of elimination, that means for the more discerning listener, they'll be well aware, well, neither Aditya or indeed Fatimatu would have actually been seen as probably occupying the role of a sports commentator for BBC Lincolnshire, and then of course deputy head of school of film journalism and media, or one of those things. Film, media and journalism. Oh, it's very confusing. John Cafferkey, that means that must be you by a process of elimination.
Yes, it is me, yeah.
Excellent.
like the worst game of Guess Who ever.
Yeah, well, you know, we want to keep it simple at this particular stage, especially when we've got the excitement later on today for people who are listening to the podcast. They might just have time to actually catch up with a Q&A with Sky Sports journalists Dharmesh Sheth and Hannah Wilkes. If you're not listening to this on our podcast, or you're listening to this on Siren Radio as a radio station, then you've missed it. But never mind, that's all part and parcel of the rich tapestry. John, you have the joy, before we get into some of the meat of this discussion, of having the first piece of music, and you've gone for Bono, The Edge, Larry Mullen, and I believe Adam Clayton, collectively known as U2. Why?
The Joshua Tree came out in 1987, I think, and it was one of the only albums I've ever queued up at a record shop to buy.
Really?
And this was just a little bit different when I was younger. And then myself, my wife, went to lots and lots of live YouTube gigs.
And is this something like that you sing regularly to Fleur then? You know, you can't live with or without you. Is that a kind of mantra for the Cafferkey household?
I would say it's more kind of Sunday Bloody Sunday, or...
Oh. intriguing. Or New Year's Day, perhaps. Well,
or...
exactly. It's all there. But it is a classic, of course. It's U2, with or without you, John Cafferkey's first selection on Cultural Connections.
She makes me wait, and I wait.
So much to pack into the programme, we need to chase the fade, to use the technical term, and welcome a fourth member of the team who originally was coming in as a substitute for the wonderful Adicha, but he's here in full force in his own way. That is Olaweshagun Olashipigun. Apologies, the pronunciation's gone way off base there. I should really have actually checked that. Ola, welcome to the programme. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you very much.
Excellent. And you're doing what at the University of Lincoln?
Media and communication.
Media and communications. Excellent. First topic that you've joined us for, of course, is this whole notion of the sport-politics issue, the relationship between sport and politics and so on. Let's turn to Fatimatu to start off with, because media and communications, obviously, you often have to address the balance in terms of PR and sport, etc. We've heard about sports washing. We've had issues relating to World Cups in Qatar. Should they have been there? World Cups in Mexico to come, and North America and Canada, USA, etc. Do you get worried about sport and politics, or is it a case of whatever?
I get a bit worried when it comes to the private leagues and stuff like that, when politics gets into it. But when it comes to the national level, I don't think there's a way we could do sports at the national level without politics. Because when it comes to the budgeting, when it comes to the organization, I don't think sports has enough funds to cater to all that without national let's say politicians, or let's say the president, the sports ministry and stuff like that coming in together. But sometimes when it comes to those governments putting in or influencing the things that we do at sports level, like let's say if you see the issues that happen in Qatar, all those issues that happened about how to marry the country's culture with sports and having to like exclude certain people because the country did not allow certain things, it gets a bit worrying because you don't know at what level that is going to influence the football or maybe just the sports. And we can't separate it. They say that we are going to watch football, we are going to watch any sporting event without governments interfering with what's going on in there. It gets a bit worrying for me. Yeah.
Okay. And do you follow any particular sport in general?
Yeah, I do football.
You do football? Yeah. Any particular favourite teams that you have?
Yeah, Chelsea.
Wow. Okay, that's okay. Everybody has their own particular choice. Yeah, that's fair enough. There is somebody actually in the studio who's a Liverpool supporter, but let's not go there. Let's move to the representation, in many ways, for cultural communications of the Indian situation and sport and politics from your own perspective. That almost is indissoluble. But what are your thoughts? In an ideal world, what would you like to have?
I think, and my opinion on this might be a bit controversial. I think we are in an ideal situation here. Sports was never meant to be just an isolation from the world, right? It is a part of just everyday ongoings of people, right? And like a lot of talk was made of the Football World Cup happening in Qatar, and rightfully so. But as you said, the next World Cup is going to the US and to Mexico. US has some pretty abhorrent laws of their own, right? And the people aren't kicking off about all of that. So I think it's just a culturally, some people like something, some people don't. And if this is a global endeavor and we want to take this game of football or any other particular sport to the world, you'll have to live in the context that they live in. So I don't think there's a real problem with politics being involved in sport.
Interesting. Same question that we put to Fatimatu. Any particular sport that you follow?
I follow a lot of sports. Football in particular is the bigger one, and I am also a Liverpool supporter.
Wow. Okay, well, obviously following Manchester City, I need to actually just step back a little while because clearly we don't have any worries at all with respect to asterisks being put in front of trophies, but that's another line for another issue. Let's turn to Oluwaseun Shingun. Your thoughts, please.
For me, I think I really don't care what's going on about these sports and politics stuff. Sports is part of society. You can never take it out of society. It's part of it. So I really don't think I really care like what's going on outside politics and stuff. So when we look at the Qatar World Cup, we had like lots of PR issues before the World Cup. But immediately the World Cup started, like we forgot about it totally. So no matter what is going on outside, when the 90 minutes is about to start, like it's out.
How important do you feel role models actually are in terms of sport? And I was doing a feature earlier today, actually, with a producer of a series for Amazon Prime and Sky called Blacks Can't Swim, and I was shocked to find that 87% of black and Asian minorities in Britain don't swim at all, basically. And he was actually arguing that's partly because there's no role model. You know, it's going to be 2052 at least before you get that kind of diversity manifested in terms of just the swimming organisations.
I really don't think role model matters, but I really don't think it matters. I feel like people, because someone is doing something, doesn't mean I will do it. It's my choice.
Very laid back, I have to say. I'm very impressed.
I really don't care. So I don't think role model really matters in society.
Okay.
I don't think
okay.
it really does.
Let's push you on your own particular favorite sport, though.
I like football, MMA, and tennis.
Excellent.
Cancelon.
Yeah. Any particular favourite teams or tennis stars that you follow?
Yeah, I support Chelsea at the moment. Well, that's bound to change anytime
soon. It's a Chelsea-Liverpool game. We should really have invited Jose Mourinho to actually take part in the whole thing. Whole line. Okay, John, some interesting responses there. What are your own kind of thoughts on the whole issue with respect to sport and politics? Because I think you've got some quite passionate views on this.
Yeah, and it's actually really interesting to hear everybody's view and this viewpoint that sport and politics are inextricably linked. There was an old advert that used to be on, I think it was a kind of promoting democracy. And if you don't do politics, what do you do? Because it's part of our everyday life. It's a part of everything we do. Lincoln City can't improve the Stacey West Stand without putting in a planning application to the City of Lincoln Council to do that work. We have a Ministry of Culture, Media and Sport at government level. So you're right that sport and politics are linked in that way. For events like Qatar, sport becomes almost weaponized by the people who don't agree with the way a country operates. So in terms of Qatar, we heard a lot of negativity from the English media about Qatar. I don't know a lot about Qatar. I don't. But what I did hear about it was all of these people hate gay people. We shouldn't be having a World Cup there. Let's boycott it or let's protest there. Let's do all of these things. And
Gary Neville and David Beckham, on the other hand, decided to take a different viewpoint.
Well, we do then get the double standards. We get the double standard of we have a Premier League where one of the current top four is owned by Saudi Arabia, the Saudi Arabian government.
Surely two.
Arm of the Saudi Arabian government.
Exactly.
And another one of the top four is owned by a Qatari-based owner. So the double standards there are massive. And all about pulling, don't pull the splinter from your foe's eye before removing the moat from your own.
Looking further down in terms of football, what Ryan Reynolds and his friend have actually done with Wrexham, phenomenal. I mean, the line that they say they've run through. I'm sure no Lincoln City supporter would be averse to a piece of Hollywood glory coming in glamour and doing a similar kind of line from that perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of sports and politics, we can go all the way back to Henry VIII and the Field of the Cloth of Gold, where they held big tournaments and would invite France over, and they became diplomatic relations.
Dial back 1,000 years to Breton circuses and the Romans from that point of view.
And we've seen sport being weaponized in the Cold War. Boycotts of the Olympics in 1980 in Moscow, and then a counter boycott in 1984 in LA. We also saw boycotts in 1976 that don't get spoken about quite so much because African nations were protesting about the treatment of South Africa and they're banned from international sports. There were talks of a boycott of Beijing in 2008. So this has always happened in sport and is always reflecting politics. And I guess what you're kind of moving into now, the ownership of sport, who gets to own our clubs, is also becoming a big political issue. We've seen Roman Abramovich chased out of Chelsea because of his political affiliations. We see Ryan Reynolds and
Rob McElhenney,
who I know from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which I do watch. And what happens if suddenly somebody digs up the wrong political affiliations of these two? Do they get chased out? Or they make the wrong film or whatever it is? So it's interesting the way in which ownership is also becoming politicised now in a way that it never was in the days of Ken Bates and Deadly Doug Ellis.
I would say Peter Swales, obviously, but that's another issue entirely. Or John Moores, perhaps. Let's not go there, because Everton, again, having one or two challenges, which presumably, John, you're not really worried about Everton these days, are you? Or are you?
I'd say more delighted than worried, Alex. I would say yes, it is pure delight.
Could be the best stadium in the Championship. Who knows? That's a line on that. And I think we've identified you're also a Liverpool fan and Lincoln City fan, presumably. Split loyalties?
Actually, they've never been split because the two haven't really encountered each other that much in my lifetime. There was a League Cup a couple of years ago, but I think it was during lockdown, so behind closed doors, that Liverpool won about 6-1 or something. But many enjoyable days have with both clubs.
Okay, next piece of music has been listed at present, and it's back to... I keep saying I'm doing a stereotype critic critic correspondent there. Aditya.
Yeah. Adi. So, you want me to explain why I picked this song?
I think so.
Yeah. So, basically, this is by one of the most talented playback singers to come out of our country. His name was Kishore Kumar. And I picked him because I have a lot of fond memories listening to his song with my father, and I miss my family back home and all of that. But more importantly, Kishore Kumar was an untrained musician, no classical training, started off as a background singer, and then made it right all the way to the top. And I feel like at this point of time, term is just winding up. A lot of my friends, international friends, who've hopped countries to come out here could really use an against all odds story. So it just felt like the right pick.
जीवन तेरे बिना ओ मेरे पिया है वो दिया के जिसमें तेल न हो के जिसमें तेल न हो मेरा जीवन तेरे बिना वो एक बाग है बहार जिसे हटकर गुजरे दूर दूर से गुजरे मुझे अपना बना ले ओ भोले अपना बना ले हाय रे भोले अपना बना ले ए, तेरे कदमों में मेरा प्यार मेरा संसार मेरी किस्मत है मुझे अपना बना ले तेरे कदमों में मेरा प्यार मेरा संसार मेरी किस्मत है मुझे अपना बना ले
अच्छा गुरु जब वो ऐसा कहेगी ना तो मैं जवाब क्या दूंगा
जवाब अरे बांगड़ू प्यार में जवाब अपने आप पूछ जाता है कहना अनुराधा
अरे गुरु 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 अनुराधा नहीं बिंदु बिंदु
अरे तेरी की भूला
कहना कहना
क्या
मेरी प्यारी बिंदु मेरी भोली री बिंदु मेरी माथे री बिंदु मेरी सिंदूरी बिंदु मेरी बिंदूरी बिंदु मेरी प्रेम की नैया बीच भंवर में गुड़गुड़ गोते खाए झटपट पार लगा दे झटपट पार लगा दे गले में डार बन जा मेरे गले का हार झूले प्रेम हिंडोले ओ झूले प्रेम हिंडोले मेरे जीवन की आशा पढ़ ले मेरे नैनों की भाषा मुझे मन में बसा ले पल 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 पलकों में छुपा ले तू झटपट आकर झटपट मेरे अंधे कुएं में दीप जला के कर दे उजाला ओ जर्रा कर दे उजाला
Excellent. Okay, moving on. You're listening to Cultural Connections on Siren Radio, and we have Fatimatu, we have John Kafaki, we have Olawa Shegun, and we have Aditya in the studio. I think, yes, that's all. So, and of course, we have our producer, Ola, keeping a weather eye out on the background for any untoward activities that are going on there. He's got a red card ready, he's got a yellow card ready. He'll brandish them if required. Let's move on to women in sport in particular, because this is, again, something where you could argue it's all down to role models. It's all down to changing, shifting views. Let's go to Ghana once again, and we'll talk to yourself, Fatimatu, in terms of your backdrop there. You know, clearly, you're doing media communications, postgraduate MA at the University of Lincoln. Would you ever consider doing sports journalism?
I did. In my earlier days when I started uni, I set out to be a sports journalist. Mm-hmm. But then along the line, so many factors set in and then I lost interest.
So was it just an interest loss, or was it a case of you felt, oh, it's such a boys' club, etc., what's the point?
Yeah, for being a sports journalist, a female sports journalist in Ghana is a bit tough. It's quite tough. We have some few cases. We have now Juliet Bewa, who is really doing well, even internationally, she's really doing well. And then we had one lady called Eva Autry. She was one person I was looking up to. But then going into journalism school and then having to go on field, trying to rub shoulders with the men and getting that opportunity, it was a bit tough because, first of all, my religion counts a bit because people want to see pretty women doing sports.
Right.
So you'd have to look in a certain way. You'd have to let your hair down. You'd have to, like, look a certain way to be able to qualify. And if you don't look that way, it's not easy for a man to hold your hand and push you. Yeah.
Okay.
So it was,
I mean,
quite tough.
Interesting, because that's something else which was echoed. I mentioned earlier, I did a feature with Ed Acura, who produced this shocking. I mean, I must admit, John, I want to pick up on this, that less than 5% of Black and Asian children in Britain are currently regular swimmers. And his documentary for Sky and Amazon Prime, Blacks Can't Swim. I mean, he himself actually only learned to swim a few years ago. He's in his late 50s. What we've just heard there from Fatimatu, is the role model so important, John, in terms of that aspect?
I mean, so much of this is cultural. We've got to go back in the kind of history of swimming and think about the people who did swim and where swimming was a big part of society. Of course, in this country, during the 19th century, the Victorians decided that leisure pursuits were a hugely important part of life. So they gave us steam trains to go to the seaside and created piers and created environments where people could swim as a leisure activity. They created huge baths in the centres of the big cities in the country to encourage people to swim. Whereas you go elsewhere in the world, and what facilities were there for people to actually pursue swimming as a leisure pursuit? And did that exist? But then we also had some, what we'd now regard as quite racist research done into the difference between white people and black people in terms of muscle density and muscle twitch. And a lot of research that has since been completely disregarded, because to say that
Bones are too big.
Yeah. But to say that the fastest man in the world, I think it's still Usain Bolt, who's the fastest man ever, is fast because he's a black man, is like saying the people in the Ryder Cup team are in the Ryder Cup team because they're white men. It's all of these divisive things that we hear about research into genetics and race theory, when actually it's the socioeconomic conditions that people are living in that decide whether they play golf or they play basketball. If you live in an inner city in the United States, chances are you're going to play basketball and not go swimming. So it's often the socioeconomic conditions that dictate what sports you will take part in, and also your leisure pursuits.
Okay. Washington?
I think John is right. Because when you look back to Nigeria, the big thing is football. If you want to come out of the streets, out of your trenches and make it big, you have to play football. Any other thing you do doesn't count. So I really can't blame the fact that black people don't go into swimming. Because if you do, they're just wasting your time.
But you can see to the message there.
Can I chip in on black people don't swim? I don't think it's the case, because back in my country, when you go to the southern part of Ghana, a lot of kids swim, but they do it for fishing.
Yeah.
They do it for fishing. So they swim in the lakes, they swim in the sea. Like, they do it just for fishing, but not as a sport. So it's because nobody is there to train them. Nobody is there to be a role model. Nobody's willing to invest that money into making them professional swimmers. That's why they are not out there. It's not because they don't. They do. So it's not about, it's just the facilities out there.
It's not about whether they can or can't.
Yeah.
It's about whether it's a leisure pursuit or a professional
pursuit. And whether it will make money, make money out of it one day.
Yeah.
Well, for people who are interested in following through the aspect, it's the third anniversary of, in Britain, the Black Swimming Association's foundation, and been set up by Ed to actually coordinate a whole range of things. Let's turn again to Aditya. Again, this notion of role models and sport, and again, getting that representation. We hear so much about it in terms of having an idol you can look up to, a person that's actually there, they've done it, we can see it being done, therefore we can engage with that. What are your thoughts?
I think personally speaking, role models have been very important throughout my life. Like I've looked at people doing certain things and felt like, okay, if this person can do it, I can do it as well. And I think after changing countries, coming to this country and seeing the job market, it's competitive, oh, there's a cost of living crisis going on, the recession's hitting, and all of that just plays a factor in our mind. Oh, will I be able to get a job after this, right? Mm-hmm. But then Daniel Khan, he came in. He's a brown person. He looks like me. He's reporting at Bulls. If he can do it, why can't I? I think that was a very, very important moment for me here because I was having a crisis of confidence within myself, right? And I feel like a lot of people do agree with this when it's just the hope that keeps you going, right? And nothing like a person who looks exactly like you doing phenomenal things, just reassuring you that you can do that too as well.
That's why the word Pelé has now been appropriated into the English language as being outstanding, basically. So, yeah, Pelé. Let's move back to the music, and we're back with yourself, of course, Fatih Matu, once again. Sean Kingston, Beautiful Girls.
No, that's not my selection.
Forgive me. Exactly. You're quite right. It's very confusing sometimes. You see, it was first you were in as a super sub, then you're in as a regular. Anyway, carry on. Why?
I just love the song, the vibe, the message, like just about the girls, beautiful girls.
Says it all in the title, really.
Suicidal when you say it's over. Damn all these beautiful girls, they only wanna do you dirt. They'll have you suicidal when they say it's over. See, it started at the park, used to chill after dark. Ooh, when you took my heart, that's when we fell apart. Cause we both thought that love lasts forever. Lasts forever. They say we too young to get ourselves sprung. Oh, we didn't care. We made it very clear. And they also said that we couldn't last together. Last together. See, it's very divine. You're one of a kind. But you mush up my mind. You are figure decline. Oh, love. My baby is driving me crazy. You're way too beautiful, girl. That's why it'll never work. You have me suicidal when you say it's over. Damn all these beautiful girls. They only wanna do you dirt. They'll have you suicidal when they say it's over. It was back in 99, watching movies all the time. Ooh, and I went away for doing my first crime. And I never thought that we was gonna see each other. See each other. And then I came out, mommy moved me down south. Ooh, I ain't with my girl who I thought was my world. It came out to be that she wasn't the girl for me. Girl for me. See, it's very divine. You're one of a kind. But you mush up my mind. You are fake and declined. Oh, Lord. My baby is driving me crazy. And now we're fighting. Please tell me why I'm feeling slighted. And I don't know how to make it better. Make it better. You're dating other guys. You're telling me lies. Oh, I can't believe
believe what I'm seeing with my eyes. I'm losing my mind, and I don't think it's clever.
Think it's clever.
You're way too beautiful, girl. That's why it'll never work. You have me suicidal, suicidal, suicidal.
Yeah, end of. Okay, moving on from the real world to the virtual world. Esports, phenomenally successful in Korea, phenomenally successful around the globe. Many people actually just pay to watch people participate in esports. What's the attraction? Let's turn to Aditya Starter. What is the attraction? Are you an esports fan, or is it a case of no?
Avid right. Esports fan.
Okay.
I watch it all the time. It's... I mean, and John and I, we've had this discussion in class as well, and I know that he stands at the end.
It's not real! It's not real!
Yeah. But my argument then and my argument right now still is the same. When we watch people play football on a football pitch, we watch it because they can do things with a football that we can't ever imagine doing. And these people who are playing these games, World of Warcraft, Counter-Strike, there's
Fortnite.
Millions of them. Fortnite, right? And they're doing things that you can't possibly do. They're training themselves to do it. They have laser quick reactions and all of that. So I think people have just found their niche now within the world of esports. Either you can be ruthlessly efficient and like win tournaments and compete, or you can just stream online on YouTube, just entertain people as well. So I really think the esports phenomenon is only just starting, because even more companies are picking up on it. There are huge investments going on. Microsoft just announced that they have a huge budget set up for esports events that they'll hold in like stadiums and arenas so that people can experience it.
I mean, back in the day, and we're talking the 20th century here as opposed to the early part of this century, there were areas where I'd say, okay, a debate over, was synchronized swimming a sport or was it an art form? Was snooker a sport or was it something that was built for color television? Was darts a sport or was that paid by slightly overweight obese individuals who'd say, and you require 180 or whatever? And I don't know, John, do you kind of feel, surely with esports, you sit on a council, you deal with that, but what that passionate focus that's just been provided suggests that, doing an esports thing is just as impressive as you said, running 400 metres in the fastest ever time.
So what you were talking about there, defining what sport is, is really, really important. And it's the first session that we do on our MA Sports Journalism. We talk about defining sport, and we go through those slides where we talk about synchronized swimming and darts and snooker and esports. So here we are with esports. So there are a couple of things I'd like to kind of touch on with esports. The first thing is how it's developing, and how it's developing in the world of, in inverted commas, real sports. I think the International Olympic Committee is now starting to recognize esports as a sport, and there are events going on under the banner of the Olympics. I think there was an event a couple of weeks ago, an international Olympic event.
Yeah, in Frankfurt.
Yeah. Here's the problem. The people who run the Olympics are people like me. They don't understand what they're dealing with here. So the actual games that they're promoting as part of, under the Olympic banner, are games that are not being played in the professional esports arena. So they're not attracting the attention in the way that they should be. And here's where the Olympic Games has a problem. As the Olympics, can I have some people in a room playing Call of Duty with the violence involved in Call of Duty and in many of the most popular, Fortnite included, many of the most popular esports games are very violent. Maybe even carrying some political messaging as well in Call of Duty. So the Olympics are very nervous about those games and about how those games reflect on the ethical values of the Olympics and the Olympic Charter and their mission to do no harm.
I mean, is it also something that we can almost say, well, the most popular participatory sport in Britain still remains angling? But actually, you know, in terms of you know, going fishing, yeah. I mean, would you see that as a sport?
I can't tell. I can't see esports as a sport. Like, sorry, because
I don't. That's, I mean, I that's the reason, basically. When I first saw COD, I thought, oh, it's all about angling. No, it's Call of Duty. It's very confusing.
I don't see it because it's just a game. You're holding a pad. So where is the physical activity in there?
I suppose you could opposable thumbs, very critical in terms of the development of that. Well,
I think that's probably the other point I wanted to touch on, which is around virtual reality. Now, Addy's tapped into that thing that we love about video games. And when I bought the very first FIFA International Soccer game, and I could always score a goal from that particular part of the penalty box, and everyone looked like Pelé playing on a computer game. But they've developed, and through virtual reality and immersive technologies, are we going to increasingly need more and more physical skill to play our video games? Mm. Will we literally have to have some footballing ability to be able to play football competitively in a video game? And I think that could be the next step and another way that they root people like me out of the game.
and let's turn to Nigeria again. That your thoughts are what you're going on in terms of esports?
I don't think it's really a sport. I think it's just like something's just like. So it's just pastime, and although it requires some mental ability. Because I play some games.
Scrabble, is that then a sport?
No.
Wordle.
No. But I think it's a nice concept, and I think there's a very big future.
And I suppose you could argue, well, there are chess championships, so chess is a sport, and that doesn't necessarily involve you to actually work out hugely to actually deal with the lines, but it's a mind sport, perhaps. Healthy mind, healthy body. John, we're coming full circle to your good self with Jerry and the Pacemakers, and of course their interpretation of the classic, as I'm sure you'd say, it all connects with my love of the musical Carousel, nothing to do with Liverpool Football Club at all. Or am I wrong?
This is a signifier that we could be in injury time.
Yeah,
and that's how I look at it. It's a song that I would have first heard as a Liverpool supporter going to Liverpool games.
And not Shirley Jones singing it.
And wouldn't have been Shirley Carousel, Jones, no. It wouldn't have been. But again, I do know that when I took my wife for the first time to Anfield on our honeymoon, it's true.
Ever the romantic, John.
0-0 draw against Arsenal. But I do remember as soon as she heard the voice of Jerry Marsden, yeah, striking up, that the tears flowed freely down her face. Wow. When she thought of who she could have married. And
when you
nice.
Walk through a storm, hold your head up high, and don't be afraid of the dark. At the end of a storm, there's a golden sky and the sweet silver song of a lark. Walk on through the wind. Oh,
And time as ever is pressing on us for cultural connections, and we have reached that stage which has become a classic feature of every programme, where we ask each guest to name one aspect of Lincoln that they found unusual or charming or, quite frankly, downright incomprehensible since they actually came to the university or indeed to Lincoln. Let's start off with Fatimatu first. Anything which, from Ghana, you thought, this is just so bizarre?
Not really bizarre, but I love how the city is so calm and quiet, like you hardly see anything go wrong in terms of noise and all that. And the cathedral is it's so lovely. I went to see the cathedral and I was amazed at the detail of how the architecture was done. I was like, how did they do this at that era, at that time? How did they think about this? It's so magnificent. I really, really, really love the detail in the cathedral. It's amazing.
Well, a bit like the swan, of course, like seeing the calm of the surface underneath, paddling like crazy. let's turn to Eddie.
So before coming here, I was obviously reading up a lot about the city, okay, where you should go and what are the things to do. And then I read about Steep Hill. I'm like, yeah, okay, that's good. And when I came here and when I first saw Steep Hill, it really lived up to the name. I was like, okay, they've named it appropriately.
It's not like K2 or the Himalayas, is it, surely?
I mean, it's not, but I'm a very unhealthy person. So it really took something out of me. That's why I've only been to the cathedral once.
You can actually take a sort of slightly side route which comes there, or indeed use public transport. All of those great routes will actually get you up there, just in case you're visiting. Aloha.
I think I like the general environment. I mean, I grew up in a place where it was all noise, busy and all, like in Lagos, Nigeria. But coming to Lincoln, like, life is peaceful. It's cool. You just wake up and no noise, nothing. Everywhere is just cool and calm. So it makes sense.
I must admit, I never thought of Lincoln as just the calm oasis of the East Midlands, basically. Although somebody once said that, yes, it usually sleeps for 1,000 years and then does something and then goes back to sleep again. John?
The obvious thing would be Sincel Bank, one of the greatest football grounds in the country, obviously. But I think that the one thing that, for me, that stands out about Lincoln, the best thing about Lincoln, is coming back. And whichever direction you're coming back from, and you can see Lincoln on any road into Lincoln, you know you're home because you can see the cathedral from miles away. And it's just that sense of being back home and seeing it approaching. Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. It's been a huge aspect which has taken us through a variety of things, from sports and politics through to esports. I'm not sure whether the team actually would maintain that esports are indeed sports, Eddie.
Exactly.
But as I say, if you use chess as an analogy, you could say that there are different sort of aspects and layers of these things. Chess boxing. What about hybridization? Now, that's often quite sort of like where you do the chess thing and then you actually box somebody and then you go back. Maybe some sort of similar thing with respect to esports could be manifest.
I've seen that done somewhere.
Like a triathlon into Fortnite.
Yeah.
That exists somewhere and I've seen it done.
Yeah.
I'll send you a link.
That's exactly. So it works on so many wonderful ways. We've reached pretty much the end of the programme. We're going out actually with, I believe it's Oluwa Sengun's line, which is Young, Dumb and Broke.
Oh, Khalid.
Khalid, exactly, to sort of wrap up this whole sequence. It's been wonderful connecting with you good selves. Great to see that, obviously, postgraduate students are still developing. And, of course, it's nice to see that one of my tutees has finally made contact with me, which is always good. So at least that's happened. Sometimes we have to physically get them to the radio station to do so. But, you know, maybe we should actually sort of have a word and say, well, maybe have some tutorials live on air. That could be another sort of show. I'll put that past Ryan. He'll have a think about that, I'm sure. But for the moment, to... Fatimato, John Kafaki. John, we really didn't talk about your path, your career pathway, etc. I mean, the commentary side of things. Do you want to just briefly see how you moved from commentary with the BBC to deputy head of school of the Lincoln School of Film and Media and Journalism?
I went off to work at Radio Derby for a couple of years, and it was a kind of stepping stone to maybe going on then to Five Live to London and doing that. and the family just decided, it's not for us. So I had to make that decision between family and success.
They've already got one John Inverdale. They don't need a Kafferty on there as well. They'd be confused.
Exactly. So we kind of relocated back to Lincoln. I had a friend who worked at the university who said, would you like to teach some radio at the university? And I said, no, I wouldn't.
No, exactly. And perfect reverse said, psychology there.
Yeah. And then I said, well, okay, I'll do some. Mm. And it just kind of ballooned from there. It just became a real passion, something I really enjoyed. And I've been here long enough now that I've ended up being the last man standing.
Well, not quite, John. I mean, there are those of us who've seen you as a young soul back in the day, but you know, it's not a competitive thing here. That's by the by. Again, to Olawashigan, and of course to Aditya. And I'm glad that the suspected challenge that you're actually faced with has been a full recovery. We know this because John gave you a full medical check before he actually would allow you on the field of play today. So that's all great from that point of view. That's it. Cultural Connections has wrapped for this particular sequence. A reminder, if you are listening to this via podcast, you might just have time to check out the Q&A with Sky Sports journalists Dharma Sheth and Hannah Wilkes at 5 p.m. on Wednesday, May the 3rd in the Cargill Lecture Theatre at the University of Lincoln. If you're not one of those early appropriators of the podcast, then you might be listening to it and the thing is gone. But there will be more events, including a women's sport event coming up, so it's a case of watch or listen to this space, I would have thought. Nods from John Cafferty. Always good for radio. It shows so perfectly. I got the pronunciation. Would you? Your pronunciation of the name, could you just be...
Olawashigan.
So yeah. I've been close, but not... anyway, Olawashigan, would you like to introduce your final choice of music today?
Khalid Jungle and Young Don Van Brook. I think I was about to finish secondary school then, so it was like song for the moment. So like we're finishing them our high school and this song just came in. So like I really fell in love with it, and since then I really love this song. Big song for me.
I give you everything, you know I wish I could. I'm so high at the moment, I'm so caught up in this. Yeah, we're just young, dumb and broke, but we still got love to give while we're young, dumb. Young, young, dumb and broke. Young, dumb. Young, young, dumb and broke. Young, dumb. Young, young, dumb and broke.
Now, in keeping with the sporting controversies of the 21st century, it has been pointed out that we haven't actually featured any of Fatimatu's music. We've incorrectly attributed a couple of choices to Fatimatu, so we've managed to actually bring in a referee to actually sort this thing out. Bob Marley and the Wailers will actually be the final track of the programme today. Fatimatu, why?
I chose it because recently one of Ghana's biggest art, Sakhodia, did a feature on it, and I loved it. I really did. But unfortunately, we can't get that one on, so we'd have to go with
The original English version, yeah. Bob Marley and the Wailers, Stir It Up.